You are tuned into the Bernard Bergen Podcast. Like, review, or share this episode with those you love and lead.
Now, I read Cry Like a Man this Saturday, and I found myself, you know, transported into Detroit of the 70s and 80s. And what I saw was a family, you know, struggling to love each other. I saw a family struggling to express love and also to heal. And what I found myself wondering, you know, was how was my father wounds affecting my view of masculinity and even showing up as toxic masculinity in my own life. You know, we push to live as a stage five man, which is we give love and we are love and we give attention and we are attention. And I think if we can heal in those places, we get to that stage so much easier. But I think for many of us, we just block those emotions. We block and still have that fear of crying. So, you know, as we go through this, guys, if things come up, you know, we are going to work diligently to give you guys the space to express that those emotions and really release what's there. Now, again, Mr. Wilson, I never like to, I guess, not give the right amount of honor to someone. You know, I think I can probably, besides Coach K, we've probably trained from your IG posts or your YouTube videos more than anybody else on this call. Like seriously, wow. You know, because the heart for men is what we're here for. Mm-hmm. And many of the videos and a lot of your content that you put out is just reminding us to not lose the generation coming behind us because we're so stuck in our ways. So, you know, I just want to thank you for that. I just wanted to give you some time to, you know, introduce yourself and truly share about who you are. Go for it, Mr. Wilson.
Of course, my name is Jason. I want to keep it engaging. So I give a just brief on who I am and what I'm about, but I really want to be here for the men on the call. And it can be as open as their hearts need it to be. I've been, I guess in short, I am a servant of the Most High, follower of Yahushua HaMashiach, or Jesus the Messiah. Just a humble man trying to finish the task that's given to me. For years, I grew up, actually many don't know I was a hip hop producer. And so during my era, and I'm definitely Coach's era, you know, it was hard to find a rap album with someone smiling on it. And so, and it was a song actually by a rapper named E-40 that was called Practice Looking Hard. And so during my era, you know, I was trained to only live under the limited definition of masculinity. And so today we hear the phrase toxic masculinity, but when I studied the word masculinity, I realized there's no such thing as toxic masculinity. Is that a man only becomes toxic when he only lives under the limitations of masculinity. And so it wasn't, brothers, until I didn't write this in my book, but I couldn't, when my mother became ill with dementia, I could not serve her only operating in my masculine attributes. I couldn't just be strong. I couldn't just be assertive or courageous. Just to, you know, those attributes weren't enough. And God told me clearly, he says, hey, listen, if you do not become a comprehensive man, you will not be able to serve and love her the way she needs to be. And so I had to draw upon compassion, long suffering, patience, just in sacrifice. And, you know, brothers, so often we run from these emotions because they pull out of us who we are. And many of us, if we're honest, when we look into the mirror, we don't like what we see. And the problem is, it's not that we're not reflecting a beautiful creation of the Most High, is that we haven't allowed ourselves to release the ugly things that are inside us or the ugly things that have happened to us. And so tears is just one facet of what it means to cry like a man. The other thing is to release the trauma and emotional pain held in our hearts and minds for years. And so that's just been my mission, to live a transparent life so that men who follow me on social media or wherever get to see, you know, the real me. And by me being transparent, brother, I'm finally free. I don't care what a person thinks. I can cry in front of men. I can cry in front of kids. I can share my love to anyone without feeling weak because I'm confident in who I am as a comprehensive man. And so, in short, I've been working real quick, I guess, to give a backstory. I started an organization called The Union in 2003, which is a faith-based nonprofit that serves youth and families in Detroit. And from my own father wound, I saw the need for Black boys to have a program, a mentoring program. And because I've been in martial arts for over 22 years, I'm like, hey, let me just create a mentoring through martial arts program. Hey, our boys need discipline, because clearly with the plethora of boot camps during that time, I thought that was the answer. But quickly, we started seeing these boot camps fold and close and start getting hearing about lawsuits against these boot camps. And what I quickly discovered was that our boys didn't need more discipline. They needed more love. And so I quickly just, I trashed my ideas of this mentoring through martial arts program and shifted the Cave of Adullam to an emotional stability training. And the rest has pretty much been history when the video went viral. And so I'm just honored to be used, and I look forward to communicating with the brothers on this call.
Man, thank you for that. And just thank you for giving us a bit of your background, because I think at times, you know, and if I hadn't read your memoir, I wouldn't know this. At times we see who's in front of us and we forget the transformation that takes place and the submission, you know, in that transformation process. And I think you just sharing your experiences will really help people understand that it's more a walk of love than it is a walk of ambition. And I think for many men, that walk of ambition challenges us in terms of which will win, the love or, you know, our ambition. So I just thank you for, you know, sharing that. And let's, you know, talk about, you know, your academy, you know, and I love that, you know, it's launched in your hometown. One of my first questions was, did you have a vision for what it has become? And do you see it expanding to other cities in any way, shape or form?
I'm still kind of oblivious to what it is, honestly, until people come up to me randomly in the streets, say, hey man, thank you for what you're doing. Or, I mean, if I'm in Hawaii with my wife, brother, for our 20th anniversary and someone recognizes me. So I literally do not know the impact that our academy is having, but I do desire to scale it nationally and even worldwide, because we get emails and messages from all over the world of boys and men who are suffering, who are incarcerated by emotions that they and trauma that they can't release. So absolutely, that's my desire. And I have some good news. I can't announce it yet, but something that's really big about to happen that you'll be able to see it on a big stage. And I'll be able to announce it hopefully in about 2 weeks.
Well, congratulations early. And, you know, thank you for what you're doing. I want to play a short clip because I think this speaks more to your work than anything else. And guys, let me know when you guys can see my screen. I would just like to hear from you. What do moments like that feel like for you at this point in the journey of everything?
You know, those moments are everything. Actually, the young boy holding up the report card is my son, Jason. And I tell all our recruits every time, I say, look, man, you know, of course we use martial arts and, you know, we teach them dining etiquette training and construction skills. But what makes us, keeps me and my assistant going is when we see them excelling in life. Like we say, you know, what we do in the cave is just the pretest or a test, but the final exam is life. And so when they excel in those moments in real life, when you see them honoring their mothers and fathers, when you see them, a kid who is prone to getting in a fight, immediately just stop fighting after you're able to release what was causing him to start fights. And just recently, man, honestly, what happened, one of our recruits improved his GPA from a 1.8 to a 3.0 in one card marking with no tutoring, simply from us pulling out of him what was holding him back emotionally and then pouring into him just the words of affirmation. And he just, I mean, he took off. His name is Tamarcus, great kid. And, you know, interestingly, his father is the only single father we have in the academy. We have a few single mothers, but this is the first single father. And it's a blessing to be able to support him like we do the mothers. We'll go buy Tamarcus a jacket, and he wants to reimburse us because he works so many hours. I'm like, no, that's a gift from us, brother. You know, we support single moms. We're going to support single dads. And so, yes, those moments are everything. When you see a young man really get it and excel in the areas what really matter, you know, that's fuel to the fire for me.
Man, I love it. And thank you for, you know, just taking the time to, you know, celebrate the successes as well along the way, because I know that the journey is a journey. And at times we don't fully understand the impact as it ripples out. Now, what rites of passages as men should we put in place for our sons, our young men, the communities we care for? I think for so many men, they didn't have that support system and maybe some of the rites of passages that some of your recruits get to benefit from. So what are some of the ones you would suggest?
Well, first, man, you know, the first rite of passage needs to start in the home, meaning until we rebuild the family unit, we'll always be on the reactionary end. And I always tell my brothers, you know, who will say, you know, we got to start another mentoring program. We need to do this, need to do that. I said, we're steadily trying to fight the fatherlessness in our communities, but we're not dealing with the reason why homes are fatherless. And so to me, you know, again, at the funeral today, a pastor friend of mine lost his son, and his message was, everyone needs a father. And so every rite of passage, man, it's supposed to be, the father was always there anyway when you look at this, especially if you study the Ashkenazi or Sephardic Jews ritual of bar mitzvah. The father is there. Even in the scriptures, when you say, when you hear Yahushua, Jesus say, when his parents asked him, where were you? He says, you know, I have to be about my father's business. Historically, when a boy passes his so-called rite of passage, his father would take him around so he can start handling his business for him. And so, again, sometimes we, you know, rite of passage is, you know, you hear it, it's like a buzzword in our communities. But I'm real big, I'm a principled person. And so I can say, hey, you can have a rite of passage. It's a company that does it through golf, you know, with fathers in golf. And the Cave of Adullam, ours is, we use martial arts, spiritual principles, and etiquette training, grooming training, all these other things. Those things are great. It's just a ritual. But without a father or a loving man there to show them that he cares, that's all it is. It's like taking a test and passing, but you don't have the support there to continue on. And so to me, you know, a rite of passage is good to teach a boy what it means to be a man, a three-year program. However, does he know the men there who are working with him truly love him? Does he know that if he doesn't pass or he makes a mistake, will they be there? You know, where is his father at in this picture? You know, and so that's just where I'm at, brother. I'm not going to add fluff, you know, say, hey, you know, we should just do this and start this program. I've been doing this too long, and I've seen too many, had to stare in the eyes of too many boys with broken hearts. And I just think right now, before we even start about constructing a rite of passage for our boys, we got to get our fathers, the broken men, healed. And until we do that, man, it's, you know, it's like putting a Band-Aid over a brick with a hole in, you know, it's terrible. So.
Yeah, no, we needed to hear that, because I think sometimes we are looking for the Band-Aid, you know, sometimes we are looking for a consistent quick fix, and love is an enduring journey. And if that's where the need is, we can't just solve it with another program or solve it with my ask, which was, you know, rite of passage. Now I want to dive a bit deep into your history and talk about some of the, you know, life events that helped shape you to empower men. And you know, in reading your book, the one thing I found was the language that you used was so poetic and but direct. And I think it speaks to your, you know, background as a musician, someone with a gift for the arts. One of the things that jumped out at me was when you talk about your mom's first husband and your eldest brother's father, mm-hmm. you called him the villain who always won. So tell us a bit about Sinclair Sr.'s impact on your mother and your brother's life.
I mean, that man won until he died. And what I mean by that is, my brother, at Monty's funeral, and he's a grown man. This was before, of course, 9/11. He literally had a gun on him, was able to get it across the plane, I believe. I can't remember. And he was going to kill his father at the funeral. That's how wounded that man left my brother. As you know, my other brother was murdered, thrown into the Detroit River. We really don't know what happened, but we know his body came up floating in the river. This man was so volatile that he would slap my brothers with the flat sides of butcher knives and would come home some nights drunk and shoot a shotgun in the house. And he would knock my mother so hard that literally when she was maybe 75, she had fell down the stairs and she had called me. Thank God she had her phone on her, and I ran and checked on her. And so we took her to get an x-ray, and she had two discs that were so loose that if she was to fall asleep, it would cut off her main nerve and she would die. And so we thought it had come from the fall, but it didn't. It had come from the years of abuse from my stepfather. And so his legacy, his rage and anger and evil tormented my mother. I mean, literally when she had her dementia, she would run when we had to go get her medication reevaluated. So she had to spend the night at the hospital. I would get a call, she's hallucinating, thinking someone's chasing. And so he appeared to have won the entire time. My brother suffered with severe depression, and he hated his father so much. He was a junior, but he removed junior from his name. And so he did a number on my family, but by God's grace, we overcame that. My brother is a great man of God. If it wasn't for him, I don't know where I would be right now. My eyes water because I think about, you know, just the pain he went through, my brother, but he stayed strong enough for me because he says, hey, you know, you don't have to be like us. And so that's why it's so important, man, that, you know, Frederick Douglass says it's easier to build boys than it is to repair broken men. I think in our effort to build boys, we're leaving men broken. And we have to get back. Of course, we can't forget about our boys, but as brothers, man, you know, we're broken, we're hurting. And until we create safe spaces for us to release the trauma, the hurt, the pain, the lack of confidence, the fears, man, what type of rite of passage are we going to give a boy when we don't even know how to be a man?
Yeah, that's a let that breathe moment, Coach K. Appreciate that, Mr. Wilson. Woo. All right, so we are going to talk a bit about redemption. You wrote, redemption has been known to take a lifetime, or it can be as quick as a single smile. How important is redemption in a man's journey to finding his voice?
When you say redemption, as far as what? Because I know the context I meant it, but...
No, your context works. Your context works.
For me, like redemption, for me in my life had to be with my father. It's again, here it is. Here I am as a boy, and my father, who is in the same city with me, only spends one day a week with me, which is mandated by the court. Picks me up from school, gets me something to eat, drops me off at home. And I never felt that he cared. I never felt that I was good enough for him. And ironically, that performance played out into my relationship with God, the Most High. I caught myself performing for him. Everything had to be top notch. Everything, you know, dot the I, cross the T. Make sure my wife has this. Make sure my son has this. Make sure I do this and that. Make sure I'm on time for this, for, you know. And I found that I was a lost son, a son that didn't have the affirmation. And so when a boy or man never receives that affirmation, we start going into other places where we feel we can get it, whether it's pornography, violence, drug use, drug abuse, gambling, whatever fills that void. And next thing you know, we're caught in a place where we can't get out. We're in a cave that has a boulder in front of it. So what freed me, what redeemed me, was when I heard my father say, "I love you, son." When I saw in his face that all the years that he dropped the ball, when I heard him heard that he told my uncle that if I could do it all over, I would. It redeemed all those years where I wish he was there, where I wish he loved me, where I wish he didn't, you know, when I lost my, the only fight I ever lost, that he didn't go cold on me when I called him. He just, you know, basically, like, I lost every fight in my life and it tore the life out of me. And then it made me I was full of rage at that moment. I mean, honestly, if I got in a fight, I would make sure I would never lose. And the next thing you know, every argument was overkill for me. Then I became passive aggressive my life started going down a path that mirrored my brother, Larry, who was very talented like I am with music, a people person, compassionate. But because he didn't have his affirmation, he went to where he could get it. And that was with the guys that were selling drugs. And so for me, brother, the redemption, of course, comes, as I said, through my father. But I cannot forget the redemption through my Lord and Savior, Yahushua, Jesus, because I was lost. And so in the Bible, when I read, "For God the Father to say to his son when Christ came out the water, 'This is my son whom I'm well pleased.'" For that to be one of two times him speaking in the New Testament is him affirming his son. I longed for that. And God never designed for a son to not have his father's affirmation. So once I was able to get redeemed by him, he was able to redeem me and my father's relationship. And so after that, you know, I'm here today, you know, and to be honest with you, even after he died, I freed him, but I still was in bondage because I still felt cheated. Like, you're gone, you're good, but what if you didn't tell me enough, you didn't leave me enough. And then I went and sought counseling through a ministry called The Crucible. And so imagine 21 brothers in a forest for 3 days, no communication, everyone broken. And you go deep and find the trauma that started in your life at 5 or 6 years old, and then you go forward. At that poor moment, I was healed. So here it is, freeing my father, but yet my father still couldn't have a picture in my home. My wife had put a picture up of him one day, and I was doing jump rope or something in my family room, and I looked, and I said, "What is this, excuse my language, nigga doing on my wall?" And she said, "That's your dad." I said, "He doesn't belong in my house." So I'm thinking I'm healed, but I still was hurting. But during this counseling session, I was finally able to hear the words that my hurt caused me to mute. Because my father did show he loved me, but it was few and far in between. He did try, but until I found out later that it was his own relationship with his father that couldn't, that hindered him from loving me. And so, man, I could go on and on, man. And that's why I'm so passionate about helping men find their healing, because there's no worse feeling than to have a son who believes in you more than you believe in yourself. And so I'm praying that God will continue to use me to help men find their own redemption.
No, that was everything wanted you to cover, because in my write-up, you know, I was going to ask you to tell us about Big O, the barber, you know, the husband, the father, the man, and you did, and just you spoke from your heart. And I think we need that, because I think so many times we mute what caused the pain, but then we mute the path to let the pain go. And I think you just talked us through why that's important. Mm-hmm. Now, I want to take everyone to a place in the book where I thought this was such a powerful and transforming moment, because your dad, as he started to age and prepare to leave the planet, he started to share with you more of who he truly was versus who he felt he needed to be. Mm-hmm. And then he had a request of you, and it basically asked you to make a promise. I'd love for you to tell us about that and then tell us what that meant for you as well.
Yeah, my entire life, brother, you know, people say, you know, I hear people talk about the church and you know, God and what they believe. I said, look here, man, you can't be more frustrated than I am. I grew up, I hated the church. I no one could come to me with a Bible. I studied Egyptology. I was pro-black, you name it. And so when I found out one day that my father was called to be a pastor, but he told God, you got the wrong man, it blew my mind. And I asked him one day, I said, hey, Dad, you know, why is that true, for one? And then two, why did you run from your calling? See, my father was a popular barber in Detroit. And so in the 60s, when they started cracking down on the pimps, all of his friends who were pimps became pastors. And he said, you know, I never wanted to be a hypocrite. And so I told God I would never pastor because there's too many of them are pimps. And when I gave my life to Christ and surrendered it over to the Most High, one of my pastors had preached a sermon on leaving a promise. And so I went to visit my father in a nursing home. I said, Dad, can you tell me something that you want me to promise you that I would do? And I would like to fulfill it, hopefully, before you leave here. He said, son, I will want you to preach the gospel, and I will want to hear you. And so, ironically, the very next week, I believe, or the following month, I had to speak at church, and it was my first time speaking. And so my father couldn't move because he was bedridden from Parkinson's, so I grabbed the headphones, put it on his head, and just eagerly watched his face because I was so used to him finding something negative to say. And he just cracked his smile when the nurse came in. He says, you know, this is my son. He's preaching. I can hear he's nervous, but he did a good job. And that there meant so much to me because that was the first time my father really affirmed an effort of mine. Even though he heard my nervousness, he smiled and said, you know, good job. And so when he died, he was a bowler. I mean, could have been pro if it wasn't for the racism in that sport during his day. I kissed him on his forehead and I said, you know, you left some pins standing, but I'm gonna knock the rest down. And so that, wow, that gets me. That literally means, you know, I'm going to break every curse, whatever you didn't do, whatever you failed at, I'm going to knock it all down and we'll pick up this spare together. And so here I am today. I know he'll be proud. Just recently, someone sent me a picture. You know, the barbershop wall is like iconic. If you can get a picture on that wall, you're admired and revered in the community, more so respected. And to see a picture of me on the wall next to Mayor Coleman Young, Barack Obama, and other iconic men and women, it was humbling. And then I smiled and I said, wow, this would make my dad really proud.
Thanks for listening to the Bernard Bergen Podcast. Leave a comment with two things you learned and one challenge to the information. Like and share this episode, and feel free to recommend topics we should cover on the podcast.